This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
All right, Denton, what do you got?
All right, well, bad news for Commanders fans that were desperate to sign T. Higgins. He's not going anywhere. The Bengals are planning on franchise tagging Higgins for the second year in a row. It's going to pay him something along the lines of $26, $27 million. The plan, according to sources, is to keep the trio of Chase, Higgins, and Burrow together for at least another year.
Okay, so I guess, you know, in reading this, this seems to be like the first step in getting him to sign a long-term contract extension. They don't want him playing on the tag at 26.8. I mean, he wouldn't be thrilled with that. That would be a problem. You read this and you follow the Bengals a little bit because of your love for Joe Burrow. This seems to be, based on the reporting that I read yesterday, the first step towards trying to work out. And by the way, they haven't taken that step. The actual franchise tag window opens today at 4 p.m. and then ends 2 weeks from today on March 4th at 4 p.m. But I guess my question to you is, they're planning on making a run at signing T. Higgins to a long-term contract extension, correct?
Yeah, that would be my guess, is that you put him on the tag for a little bit. And I believe what their plan is, it's the non-exclusive. So somebody can negotiate with him, and then all they have to do is match. It's similar to what Baltimore did with Lamar a couple of years ago. It obviously ended up not being much for Baltimore, but it allows them to match what other offer. So you're kind of letting everybody else do the work for you. But in doing so, it gives you time to iron out the Jamar Chase extension. You get that one out of the way. You can kind of maneuver the money around to have a lesser cap hit, and then you can sign T. Higgins to an extension.
Yeah, so a couple of things. Number one, this is a story for our city because and our team, because I think many of you believe that T. Higgins should be either at the top of the list or near the top of the list of free agent offseason targets. And he would be the number one free agent on the market when free agency begins if he gets there without being tagged. As Denton said, the non-exclusive franchise tag means that teams can come in and sign him to an offer sheet, and then that gives the Bengals the chance to either match it and keep him or work out compensation. The, you know, NFLPA, the collective bargaining agreement says in the case of a franchise tag player being signed under the non-exclusive tag that the compensation is 2 first-round picks. I don't think that anybody's going to give Cincinnati 2 first-round picks for T. Higgins. And, you know, quite honestly, they would prefer not to give Cincinnati anything. They would prefer to work out a long-term deal and sign him as an unrestricted free agent. So Cincinnati's preventing that for the time being. But the question, I guess, is are they preventing that because they want compensation back for him and they're willing to let him go with another offer and they think they'll get offers? Or is it just a way to buy time here to figure out the Chase deal and to ultimately, I mean, I'm reading that the plan is for Cincinnati to sign Chase, to sign Higgins and to sign sign Hendrickson, you know, as their pass rushing defensive end. If that's the case, let me just say this. You know what I think about Burrow in that offense. It's what you think.
Yes.
That thing was unstoppable at times. That was the best pass offense in the NFL. They struggled on defense. And if I were a Bengals fan, I'd want Higgins back. Chase is going to get Jefferson money, if not more. I mean, he won the Triple Crown this year. He was the best receiver in football and had one of the greatest seasons we've ever seen. You know, that kind of went under the radar a little bit. He's going to get a Jefferson deal or higher. Is it smart to build a football team with two receivers making $30 million or more?
A survey would say no to that. I mean, the nice thing that they would have is the window is the offense. They're not going to win a championship based off a defense at this
point. The window is Joe Burrow.
The window is Joe Burrow, the same way that we are hoping here that the window is Jaden Daniels. You just have different eras of windows. So the window is going to be Joe Burrow. My hope is that they spend so much money on Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins, and maybe a little bit on the offensive line, that Trey Hendrickson slips through the cracks a little bit, and he needs a new home because he's had 35 sacks in the last 2 years. I was stunned when I saw that.
17.5, 17.5.
Yeah.
Back-to-back.
Insanity. Like, that guy,
does not get the same love that Myles Garrett, that T.J. Watt, that even Max Crosby gets.
No. So I hope he slips through the cracks a little bit, but the plan should be, I mean, Joe Burrow has said publicly, and if he's saying it publicly, you know he's saying it behind closed doors as well, they need to keep T. Higgins. He wants to keep T. Higgins, and because he is your franchise quarterback and the one that, if you're the ownership group, is going to be making you a lot of money for years to come, you got to make him happy.
So in our conversations about T. Higgins, we have both agreed that from a pair of hands standpoint, he may have the best in the league. It's not an exaggeration. He's got the best hands of any receiver in the league. Certainly you could argue that. The question is he worth $30 million plus a year? I don't know if he is. And, you know, ultimately teams, even with all unlimited cap space for the most part, you have to make the decision because you can't set a precedent by overpaying somebody that you don't believe deserves it. But the market, the open market, I think would dictate that Higgins ends up in the $30 million per year average. Like, the Bengals would actually be better off paying him for one more season at $26.17 million, but you can't franchise him a third time. You can, but it's 144%. Now, that still might be a good deal. I mean, actually, when you think about it, Cincinnati going the franchise tag route, $26.17 million is an average for 25, or as a salary for 25, Denton, would be less than the average annual they would pay him on a long-term contract extension.
Right.
It may not be from an accounting standpoint as big of a cap number in 25, but it would be more money on a per-year basis. They'd have him locked in for years to come. But if you go 144% and now you're in the 30-something million for next year, it still may be less than what he would get on the open market next year. The issue is, if you go that route, you have an unhappy player. Players don't want to play under that, especially, you know, Kirk did here, understood, because the team lowballed him so much, so he didn't really have the option of taking any long-term deal. The team didn't offer him a legitimate long-term deal at any point, including after his last year. But playing quarterback on back-to-back franchise tags is different than playing a position where there's more risk. I mean, Higgins would much prefer to have a $100 million plus signing bonus and a 5-year deal at $30 million per year, something like that, than playing year by year on franchise tags. But maybe it makes sense for Cincinnati. You just would have an unhappy player in that situation.
And eventually that having that cap hit is going to be
a ton
when it comes to filling out. Because it's not like their passing offense obviously was the butter to their bread, but their defense sucked. And you have to get better on defense. Unless they are of the belief that it was the defensive coordinator who was a hotshot candidate for head coaching positions for like the last 2 years, and unless they think that he was the sole reason why things didn't work, you have to allocate some sort of money on that side of the football, which would lead me to believe that a long-term deal would be way easier to do that when you can maneuver that money around.
The other thing, too, and just thinking about it, because I remember when we had these conversations, you know, the third tag, which I don't think anybody's ever gotten, right? I don't think there have been multiple players that have gotten tagged twice. I don't think we've had a player that got tagged three times, right? Pretty sure we haven't.
I'm looking that up now. I can't imagine.
It's 144% of the previous year's salary. Okay, so it's not an average of the top five. That's how you determine that first year. After that, it's 120% from last year, and then it's 144%. So you're talking about the dude would end up making $35, $36 million next year.
So it seems like there's been a few players that have gotten franchise tagged 3 years in a row. The one that
really
keeps popping up is Walter Jones of the Seahawks.
Oh,
and they
eventually
had a long-term
in
deal.
In the early days, yeah. Because the franchise tag history, I'm going to look it up, but I want to say it started once free agency started.
It looks like it started in 1993.
That's the year free agency started, yeah.
I did not realize free agency was that young.
Yeah, 93 was the first year. Joe Gibbs saw it coming, and that's when he retired. There were a lot of reasons he retired. But it was Washington was an old team. You had a salary cap for the first time, free agency. Before that, there was no free agency. There was no salary cap. So teams that were willing to spend a lot of money to keep players on the injured list, and long-term lists were rewarded by being able to develop them. Washington did that with Mark Rippon, as an example. All right, what else do you got?
Spring training.
Cincinnati. I think they're going to try to keep this. I think what you said about a window, I think they're looking at it like, we have a window with Joe Burrow here. This is another window. We won 9 games with a bad defense. But we were, remember, they had some games that they lost that they should not have lost.
Yeah.
The Baltimore game at home, they should not have lost that game.
And the Kansas City game in week 2.
The Chiefs game in week 2. You know, their losses, they were only beaten, they had 8 losses this year, okay? By 6, by 1, by 5, by 3 in overtime. By 1, by 7, by 6, and the only team that clubbed them, the only team was Philadelphia. They lost 37-17. Every other game was a one-score game, 6 points or less, that they lost. They went for 2 to beat Baltimore at the end, didn't they?
If I remember correctly, yes, they did.
Yeah. But that was the game in Baltimore. The game in Cincinnati was when they were in kind of field goal range in overtime after Lamar fumbled. You remember this more than I do. Am I remembering it correctly?
Missed? Yeah, McPherson, whatever his name is.
They got really conservative, and they put him out there for a long field goal, and he missed it.
They just started taking knees, and you're just like, this is not going to work. And I think it was like 54-yarder or something like that.
If they had gotten into the postseason by winning one more football game this year, they would have been a tough out in the AFC playoffs.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, you almost have to look at that and say, okay, our defense sucked and we still won 9 games and we were 1 game out and we would have been hell to deal with. Nobody would have wanted to play us.
Yeah,
all right, what else?
They would have matched up with Buffalo. It would have been awful. Spring training starts this week for the Nationals. Davey Martinez announced over the weekend that Mackenzie Gore is going to be the opening day spring training starter. A lot of expectations on Mackenzie Gore. I'm hoping that this is the year where he takes a big step into consistency. We've seen some ups from him. We saw a little bit of downs from him last year as well.
Interesting column this morning by Barry Zwarluga in the Washington Post just about the Nats and about Lerner and, you know, the state of them spending, not spending, etc. Mackenzie Gore is clearly their best starter. I'm just curious, what is the situation with Cade Cavalli for 2025?
I believe
is he going to be ready to pitch or not?
He's definitely working back from injury. I don't know if we have any concrete idea of what his year will look like. I believe Josiah Gray is also making his way back from injury, so they're optimistic that we get him sooner rather than later, but I don't think that he is fully working out now.
I know there's some excitement about Cruz and Wood and some of the young guys, but I mean, Juan Soto's in New York playing with the Mets. The Phillies added stuff. The Braves have won division titles, you know, in 3 of the last 4 years or whatever it is. Like, they might be improved, but are they going to be improved enough to have meaningful games in September? I don't know. Like, they're not they're certainly not giving Mike Rizzo an opportunity to bring in a star of some sort. All right, what else do you have?
Did you pay attention at all to the festivities this weekend of Saturday Night Live and their 50th anniversary?
I watched, okay, I'll just tell you. I watched the first hour of it with my wife,
mm-hmm.
and I found it to be unfunny for a lot of it.
The march to spring training and opening day is upon us. Rob Bradford from Baseballs and Boring here, and we'll have you covered every single day with podcasts that aim to educate, entertain, and inform you as a baseball fan. Follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Boring, a bit disorganized, and that's when I did what I told you I would not do last week, and I turned
so
it
you flipped on the All-Star
to the
game.
All-Star Exhibition Tournament, or whatever it was called.
So I watched a little bit of SNL 50. That's not exactly why I'm bringing this up, but because it was such a big deal and it was on Sunday, irony, but they did this whole like rollout, and I'm curious if you saw, because I know you're a big, big Nirvana fan, that Post Malone did a cover of Smells Like Teen Spirit on one of the events.
I heard about it. I did not see it. I had turned it from that point, and I'm upset about that. Yeah. So, I can go back and watch. I'll watch it on YouTube. Was it good or not?
Well, let's find out together, because I have a snippet of it. I don't know if I can play the entire thing, but this is Post Malone playing Nirvana.
It's hard. It doesn't sound terrible as I'm listening to it. I need to watch it. What? Give me your thoughts.
I think Post Malone is talented.
He's super talented. And by the way, I'm pretty sure has covered a bunch of grunge songs, because I like Post Malone, and I think he's covered. I think he covered Better Man, Pearl Jam's Better Man, at some show. He may have done that on Howard Stern a couple of years ago. I think I'm remembering it to be Post Malone. I think he's covered some Alice in Chains. So he's a big grunge fan.
Right.
But that'd be one I'd want to watch.
So I think the performance of it, you know, Dave Grohl is on drums, which I know is something that obviously you would like. Dave Grohl, a member of Nirvana, for those that are unaware. I think this area has a pretty good familiarity with
he's
Dave
from
Grohl.
Here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The performance element, I thought, was fine. You know, Post Malone, as you mentioned, has done a lot of covers in the past. I think it's tough.
Am I right about that? Was he the one that did Better Man on Stern? I think it was a couple of years ago.
But I know that he's done grunge covers.
He was excellent doing it. Yeah.
I think he's a very talented singer. It is just a very difficult
task. It was Post Malone on Stern.
It's a difficult task to cover Smells Like Teen Spirit. That's kind of an iconic song.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Nevermind is flat out one of the great rock albums. You can call it grunge, whatever you want. It's one of the great rock albums of all time. I did not see it. I will go watch it, though. I'll be very interested to watch it. I think he's talented, and he likes clearly some of the same music that I like. What else?
Are you going
to
watch Court of Gold on Netflix? It's a documentary that followed the Team USA gold medal run this summer with Steph involved, Kevin Durant, LeBron. You're getting a lot of access to the players on that run that they went on. It dropped this morning.
Probably not. I did watch something last night. It was about the girl. It was the murder of the girl from New York whose boyfriend killed her out in Wyoming in the park.
TikTok girl?
Petito.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gabby Petito.
Gabby Petito. I mean, sort of screwed up the whole process in which the family of the killer, the murderer, handled it. It was pretty repulsive. But anyway, that to me would be more enjoyable to watch. Court of Gold, it's called?
Yeah, Court of Gold.
Than what I watched on Sunday night.
Anyone that watches this, if they already are not a fan of Kevin Durant, I've just seen some clips from it. You're going to love Kevin Durant by the end of this. I think Kevin Durant's going to come off really, really good.
Have you seen some of his quotes from the last couple of days?
I have seen some of his quotes from the last couple of days. If you put that to the side, some of the stuff in this docuseries is, or documentary is sensational.
All right. Okay. Look, I mean, KD's one of the all-time greatest and most fun scorers in the history of the game to watch. But I'm going to get to a bit of a take on Sunday night's All-Star game, and a lot of it has to do with what Durant said about it. But anyway, what else?
Right.
If you're asking me, will I watch that? I'll certainly give it a shot. To me, it's more interesting to find out how these guys interact with each other than it is to watch them on All-Star weekend.
Definitely. And just, I will always relive that run, those final two games with Steph, who's one of my favorite players ever, going crazy. I watch that every couple months, to be honest. Like, I love that final game. Final piece of news here before we get to the All-Star stuff. I left all that out here because I figured we'd do a segment on it. But the agent of Caitlin Clark, Aaron Kane, said that the WNBA will never be able to pay Caitlin Clark what she's worth to the league, calling it impossible to reach that number.
Well, I've read things over the last several months about, you know, people trying to quantify what she meant to the league. It's like insane. Like, it's more than just the league. Apparently, her impact just on the Indianapolis local economy was like in the tens to maybe even close to, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. That's crazy. But her economic impact on the city of Indianapolis, where she played, for those of you who don't know, in the WNBA, was incredible.
I have that
clearly
number, by the way.
I mean, we don't even need a study to understand that, I don't know, 8 out of the 10 people that watched the WNBA last year were watching for the first time, and the reason was Caitlin Clark.
I have some numbers on that for you.
Okay.
An economist at Indiana University Columbus, I would assume that's somewhere in Indianapolis, they said that Caitlin Clark was responsible for a $36 million economic impact in the city of Indianapolis and almost 27% of the league's economic activity for 2024.
All right, so I said tens of millions, and I thought I had read something that it may have been $100 million, but $36 million in economic impact to the city of Indianapolis. And 27% of what? The league's what?
Of the league's 2024 economic activity, which includes attendance, merchandise sales, and television.
And what does the WNBA do in top line revenue?
That is not in this article. It's not very high, but her salary is expected to be $78,000.
Yeah, that's the point, right? Is that whatever you read to begin with, it's somebody saying what they're paying her in a salary isn't anywhere near what her actual worth to the league and the sport is. But I don't know how you change that when these salaries are collectively bargained, right? I think they are.
Yes, they
are. In the WNBA, right? There's a union. There's a collective bargaining agreement.
Yes, they are collectively bargained, so she can't really.
So there's a max. What's the max?
There's a max. I believe the max comes after the first contract, and I believe it's in the neighborhood of $264,000. So it's not even getting close to a million.
I think I read somewhere where like the league has this kind of budget, what they call a marketing budget, and it might be a $500,000. Dollars, like another $500,000. That seems so low, but I mean, the league hemorrhaged for 28 years or whatever it was.
So
it was subsidized by the NBA.
We don't have the 2024 numbers, but in 2023, the estimated revenue of the WNBA was $200 million.
Okay.
So fair to think, so with Caitlin Clark, it was a lot more.
Yeah. So basically, she was worth, you know, close to $60 million of that. Whatever the economic impact, whatever the increase was from the year before. I find it interesting, too, that some of the conversation about the WNBA after they got that big TV deal, that the NBA gave them a bigger chunk of the massive deal that they negotiated, right? What's the value? Is it $7 billion or whatever it is to the NBA? And they gave the WNBA a massive chunk of that deal for the first time. I mean, not, you know, 10% of it or whatever it was. What are the numbers? I'm getting mixed up. What was the TV deal that the NBA did? Was it $7 billion or like less than that? It's got to be less than that,
It was less than
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it can't be $7 billion.
But the WNBA announced an 11-year media rights deal. That the deal for the NBA was $2.2 billion or $200 million per year. And the WNBA is getting a part of that.
Okay. Well, there were people in the WNBA speaking of like possibilities of breaking away from the NBA to cut their own TV deals. Like, I mean, I understand that the WNBA is in a position it's never been in before. And the reason for that is Caitlin Clark. Number one, two, three, four, five, and six in terms of the reasons. Whatever number seven is, it's way down the list. Whatever number two is, it's way down the list. So I think that the NBA and its owners own the majority of the WNBA. So it's not something that they can do on their own. Leagues, I mean, I think people like Ted Leonsis and NBA owners own a majority of the WNBA. Haven't we gone through that before?
Yeah, we have gone through. Let me just readjust these numbers because I was way off. The NBA got a $76 billion TV deal over 11 years.
So it was $7 billion a year.
It was $7 billion a year.
Right, so roughly. That's what I was thinking of.
And the WNBA got a $2.2 billion over that time frame, which is about $200 million per year.
Right, okay. Yeah, but still, the biggest TV chunk they've ever gotten by far.
By far. And this had been when we knew that Caitlin Clark was going to, she hadn't reached the peak of what Caitlin Clark was at the WNBA because she was still like kind of struggling in July when this deal was done. But she knew that she was going to be a star. She had already driven a lot of eyes to the product.
Right. All right. I mean, I don't know what the, look, her, she's not struggling. Her endorsement deals are massive. I would like to know what, I mean, has anybody done an overall compensation for Caitlin Clark's story? Do we know what her overall annual compensation is with endorsements?
So
it's clearly not salary related in the WNBA.
It looks like she is in for an annual payday of about $11 million.
Yeah.
That does include her WNBA salary, but that's not a lot.
Right.
It makes up 1% of her earnings.
Right. Okay, what else? Do you have anything else?
That's all I got for you. I saved the All-Star stuff, so we can go over that later.
Yeah, I do have a take on that. We'll get to that next. Gary Williams next hour. Kevin Sheehan Show, The Team 980, theteam980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app.